Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guy. It's the People's Radio. It's RG up in your headphones. Allow me to introduce
the illustrious Queen Anne Poop. Marcus the Game Changer. The Seventh Jackson. D. Will. The Ill Executive. He's like Suge Knight without the anger management issues. Phil T, the sports PhD. This dude is coming at you from all angles. He's got all the bases covered. There's not a whole lot about sports this brother don't know.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Featuring Justin Page, Eric Hamilton.
RG fam is like, woo.
Now, I blame it on Nintendo.
It's definitely a gin party around here. Definitely a gin party.
Don't bring any Kool-Aid.
You don't get no better than this, baby.
I want winners. You guys act like it. Pick it up a little bit. Okay? Get your chin up. Smile. Smile. Anybody can be peachy.
Don't get no more
real. Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. RealSportsGuys.com. RSG, Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital. Welcome. First off, I'd like to thank you for joining us this evening. You could have been anywhere in the world, but you chose to be here with us. We appreciate your patronage. Now, before we get into the proceedings this evening, allow me to introduce the illustrious three-man booth. I am your host, Marcus the Game Changer. I will introduce my comrades in arms this evening before we get into what we get into. To my right, I got my man, 100 Grand, D. Wills. Holler at the people.
What's up? What's up? I see Andy Reid added to the unemployment percentage today. He took it from 7.8 to 8. I know we'll talk about that. It's good to be here tonight on debate night.
Right on. Right on. Yeah, we're going to get into that. We're going to get into that a bit. On my left, sitting in for Phil T. Sports PhD, we got our resident RSG NBA expert, Justin Page. Round of applause from the people. How you doing, man?
Fellas, good evening. Good evening. Glad to be here. Got the wife out of town, put the kids to bed, worked a long day, but guess what? The show must go on. Let's go.
Let's get into it. So, as usual, we have a jam-packed two-hour show lined up for you all. I'm going to go ahead and get into the intro to let them know where we run down all the things that we hope to cover in this edition of the Real Sports Guys, RSG Renegade Radio. Tonight, we're going to talk about, in the Funk editorial, we're going to get into the anatomy of a dynasty. What makes a dynasty? Each of us is going to give you our definition. We're going to talk about that, break it down, talk about all the different pieces, give you some of our dynasties, current dynasties or teams that have the opportunity, franchises that have the opportunity to build a dynasty. So we're going to get into that a little bit. I'm going to give you my top 25. Each of us is making a list of our top 25 NBA players. I'm going to give you my 25 through 21. So be on the lookout for that. I'm sure that's going to be heated. there may be some contesting to my list. We will see. We're going to recap week 7 in the NFL. Hit you with the 5 on the black-hand side. We're going to, again, continue to prep you for the NBA season. We have the NBA special that will be coming up next week. So be on the lookout for that. It will be released on iTunes on Thursday, October 25th. So make sure you check that out. That will be featuring Justin Page, myself, and D. Wills breaking down, getting you ready for the new season. We're going to get into a little bit of that, give you a taste of that in the 5 on the black-hand side tonight. We're going to hit you with some onions, talk about some college football, get into the dog of the week, and then shut it down. So with that said, we're going to keep it rolling. We're going to jump right into it. So, fellas, let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner.
Fellas, only one thing we need to say. Shall we say it, y'all? Melvin, Jimmy, Coleman, Ryan, say it. Everybody want to get funky one more time.
So this past week, you know, I do a lot of reading. You know, I'm deep into the sports scene, and you know, I read a lot of stuff, listen to a lot of stuff. And I read an article by Bill Simmons on Grantland.com where he talked about the urgency of the Oklahoma City to sign James Harden. And in the article, he talked about the nature of a dynasty. And it got me thinking, that's something that we need to talk about. RSG needs to tackle that. What is a dynasty? Because it's a word that gets thrown around a lot. We need to frame that up for you all. We need to help you guys understand from our perspective, from the Renegades' perspective, what constitutes a dynasty. So I'm going to toss this one into the post with my man D. Wills to get us started. So D. Wills, how do you define a dynasty?
This was a good question. And when we posed this as something that we wanted to talk about, I had to go deep into kind of thinking about what would constitute a dynasty. And so where I started is dynasties are usually they set the standard in a way by the way that they compete. Dynasties usually win multiple championships within a 6 to 8 year period. And so that's one thing I look at. So they've won multiple championships. They've set the standard in a way that you can feel the ripple effect of how people in their sport change as a result of how the way in which they that they dominated. And they usually define it a generation. So example of that is the West Coast offense. Bill Walsh in the San Francisco 49ers over that period with Montana probably were defined as a dynasty. And the way in which offenses were developed and created forever changed following the 49ers. So you can pretty much connect the DNA of the sport to that dynasty.
Okay. Excellent. So, you know, you talked about being able to define an identity, defining eras, bringing new things into the sport. You know, one thing I think about, and you know, as I was thinking about this, I really wanted to be concise and try and sum it up because this is something that I can get long-winded. You know, I have a tendency to do that. You know, apologies in advance. So thinking about that, you know, I came up with three words as I was thinking about this whole question about how would I define a dynasty: innovation, identification, and domination. And I think you kind of hit on that. When I say innovation, I'm talking about bringing something new to the game, bringing a wrinkle, whether it's a defensive scheme, offensive scheme, a way of playing, a way of handling things, a style of play, whether it's the big red machine in baseball where, you know, those guys hustled. They brought a different level of hustle to baseball, and it was signified by certain players. When you talk about, you know, identification when you talk about the Lakers in the NBA and the Celtics in the NBA and those franchises. When you talk about basketball in the 80s, you think of those two teams. That's identification. And then you got domination. In the end, you got to win. You know, you talk about the Steelers of the 70s, where they ran the league. Year in and year out, you knew the championship went through that particular franchise. So to me, that's what constitutes, when you have all those three things together, that's what ultimately constitutes a dynasty. You look at the Bulls, Jordan's Bulls. You had the triangle offense, innovation. You had identification, Mike, Scotty, you know, the red shorts with the diamond on them. You identified that with the Bulls, and that was the league. Then you had domination, owning the league. So to me, that's kind of how I see a dynasty looking. Now, Justin, I want to pull you in. Now, do you think we're going to continue to see dynasties, or are dynasties something that, you know, some people may say that Bulls team was the last true dynasty? The Patriots are kind of a pseudo-dynasty. The Spurs, kind of a pseudo-dynasty. The early 2000s, the Shaq and Kobe Lakers, kind of a pseudo-dynasty, but they didn't have the longevity or the consistency to be really considered a dynasty. What do you think about that?
Well, to answer your question, Game Changer, I wouldn't even discredit the Patriots or the Spurs as a pseudo-dynasty. I think they've proven time and time again that they can get it done. I'm not... You know, I may not be as intellectual as you fellas. When I think of dynasty, I went back to Webster. Webster can tell me what a dynasty is. So based on what I read from Webster, it's a succession of rulers. It's royalty. It's powerful leaders. When I think that, I think Chicago Bulls in the 90s. I think Lakers in the 80s. I think Spurs in the late 90s, early 2000s. I think teams like that. I think Lance Armstrong, minus the cheating and cycling. I think possibly the New England Patriots. And I don't see it happening as much nowadays. However, I think certain teams, certain organizations, such as the Miami Heat, have the ability to sustain a dynasty. It's just yet to be seen.
Okay. All right. So you qualify the Patriots as a dynasty?
Three titles in less than a decade. I think that something needs to be said for that.
Got it. Who are some other teams currently that you would qualify as dynasties?
Like I gave you, the Magic Johnson-led Lakers, the Michael Jordan-led Chicago Bulls, the Tim Duncan-led San Antonio Spurs. I think of multiple championships, 3, 4, 6. You know, I hesitate, you know.
UConn women's basketball.
UConn's women's basketball for sure, absolutely. Duke 91-92 team that won the back-to-back. I mean, there's very few real dynasties out there, but the ones that we've listed are pretty much, you know, it. You know, you could get the Lakers, the team with Kobe and Shaq won. However, it was, you know, Shaq didn't have the level of commitment that Kobe and others on the team had. Therefore, that led to them being broken up too soon. I think they had the ability to become a Bulls-like dynasty. So if that's the only one I'll discredit and call a pseudo-dynasty, so kudos to you, Game Changer, for that quote, pseudo-dynasty for the Lakers.
All right. So looking at today's landscape across all sports, you could go any sport. We're not going to just limit it to NFL, NBA, MLB. You can go off the board and go in a different direction. Dynasty today, D. Wills, what do you see? Who has the potential, or who is a dynasty currently, or has the potential to become a dynasty?
Well, you can look at a conference as a dynasty at this point, is SEC. But I think within that, Alabama may have a chance to be a dynasty if they put together, if they win a national championship this year and then they win another one next year. They're a program that's on the verge of being able to do that. So I would say for them, We just talked about, you know, UConn always has the ability because of what we said about women's basketball, and it's still, as a, in terms of where the talent migrates to, is a lot like men's basketball was in the 70s, where there were a handful of teams that controlled the sport. It's just now on the verge of really broadening it, but I think it lends itself to still allowing teams to put together back-to-back championships, and I think UConn is always in the position to put those multiple championships together. So those are some teams that just come to mind.
Okay. All right. So, Justin, who do you see kind of falling into that dynasty mold currently?
To be frank, I'm just going to tell you straight up, the Miami Heat. I mean, if you look at what they did just two summers ago with the addition of LeBron James and Chris Bosh to already one of the top 10 players in the NBA and D-Wade, I mean, that's the recipe for dynasty. Why do you think teams are going out and creating these mega powers now? The Miami Heat started that. Why did the Nets get Joe Johnson? Because of LeBron James. Why did the Lakers get Steve Nash and Dwight Howard? They're trying to keep up with the powerhouse that is of the Miami Heat. So to go back to your definition, innovation, identification, and domination, I think they were very innovative in the fact that they got three real superstars in their primes. Boston started that with KG, Ray, and Pierce. But Pierce and Ray weren't necessarily in their primes. Matter of fact, KG had some miles on his legs too. These guys are in their prime. So they were innovative in the fact that they put three superpowers together. Their identity is fast pace. Get out in the open floor. We don't need a center. We can outrun you guys, and we can still defend because we got the best, most powerful physical specimen in the game in LeBron James. And we got an unconventional big man who can step out and hit the three. That's their identity. They run, they get after you defensively, and they put the pressure on you so you can't do anything with them. And as you saw last year, they dominated. Everybody thought OKC was going to get those boys problems in the finals. Guess what? It wasn't even a matchup. They almost got swept. If you think back, yeah, you think they did get swept the way the Miami Heat dominated. So they were innovative, they had identification, and they dominated. The Miami Heat will be the next dynasty that we see in our time.
Okay. So names I like to throw out there as current dynasties, and I'm going to go off the board and go with an individual sport. Serena Williams. She has ruled the sport of tennis over the last decade plus. Just dominated the amount of majors that she's won, way that she's been able to – the innovative way she's been able to market herself and take her success on the court and then branch it into other ventures. You know, I know that word is overused, but she's done a great job of branding herself. So that's one. Another one I throw out there for you guys, and you tell me what you think on this one, all right? And I think we're on the precipice of something crazy because it just keeps happening, all right? University of Kentucky basketball, watch out. Year in and year out, Cal is pulling the best recruiting classes. I mean, he's getting 5-5 level recruiting classes on a yearly basis. And he's got another crew coming in next year. This year's crew is decent. They're solid. They're not as good as last year's crew. They're not as good as John Wall's crew, but they're still pretty daggone good. I mean, he won a championship last year with a roster that was led by freshmen. This year, he's about to try it again. And next year, he's going to try it again. I think we're going to see Kentucky Blue in the Final Four for a long time. Because right now, with the landscape of college basketball, with everybody leaving early, you can do it with freshmen. You can make it happen with freshmen. And he proved it last year. What do you guys think about Kentucky as a burgeoning dynasty?
I would say that they can get to the Elite Eight in the Final Four. But again, you know, Dynasty's finished. And I'm not quite sure that there won't be time, you know. Davis was able to cover up for a lot of stuff.
Yeah, Davis did cover up a lot. You know, he did allow them to make a lot of mistakes because of his ability. But again, like, I'm still not sold on Anthony Davis as a legit franchise player, you know, and there are a lot of reasons for that.
We going to take it there, Game Changer, already? We going to take it there this early in the show. We 20 minutes in. You want to go here with me?
I go, what? What you got? Sell me, all right? I'm willing to be so. I'm like these people watching this debate. Who's undecided? You know, this kills me about these debates, man. And I got the debate on in the background. You know, I'm trying to be a responsible citizen and everything, trying to be a grown-up. So I got the debate on in the background, and it just baffles me at how all these people are undecided. The election's like 3 weeks away, and you still don't know who you're voting for. So I'm gonna be one of these cats in the audience at the debate. Sway me, convince me.
Well, just because my priorities are out of order, and I'm not watching the debate, I'm watching Boston Celtics, New Jersey Nets preseason basketball. I may not be responsible. I'm a true fan. I'm responsible to the NBA. However, if you just tune back into our USA draft special when we talked about Anthony Davis. I think we covered him several shows, several times. So I'm not going to go into too much detail tonight to get us off track because we could talk about it all night. But he's one of the very few freshmen in the country to ever win the NCAA MVP, the Freshman of the Year, the Player of the Year, and a gold medal all in 1 year. That should speak for itself. The guy went number one for a reason, and he's gonna turn New Orleans into a formidable contender. And if you want to debate me on that, like I said, we can go all night.
Davis has got a ton of skill, man. Davis can play. But as far as being on that level as a franchise dude, being able to really turn around a franchise, I'm not buying it just yet, man. I'm not buying it right now. And again, for me, being a lead dog is a mental thing more than anything. It's cats with game who can't be the lead dog. It's not about – the kid can play. The kid has a lot of talent. He can do a lot of things on the court. The kid can ball. We all know the mental side of the game is what separates LeBron from Corey Maggette. Both of them physical beasts. Both of them amazing physical specimens, amazing athletes. But something ain't clicking with Corey. Something clicked with LeBron. Now, I'm not saying that Anthony Davis is on Corey Maggette's level, but I think he's a good 1A, 2. I don't think he's a legit 1 lead dog because there aren't that many of those guys. And that's not a knock on him. That's just I think people are putting unrealistic expectations on him. That's how I feel about it.
What have you seen from him to give your statement any credence? The guy was at Kentucky. He was averaging less than 10 shots a game the first half of the season and never complained. All he did was take over games from the defensive side of the basketball and earn the respect of his teammates. Plus, the guy won a gold medal. Do you not think he learned anything from LeBron, from Kobe, from Melo, and all those superstars he strives to be like over the past summer? I guarantee you he walked away with leadership skills that are impeccable to all the other rookies who didn't have that experience this year.
Yes, I guarantee. If he didn't learn a lot, that would be a red flag. But I guarantee he learned a lot from that experience. Any player would have. My thing is, how did he perform in a championship game? What was he on offense? One for what?
Tell me a stat line. Tell me that.
He was one for whatever. He played amazing. It's much, much harder to dominate on the defensive end in the NBA because you have such skilled offensive players. it's much. You can still be a great defensive player, but to dominate defensively is very difficult to do. And we really haven't seen anybody do that. Dwight Howard is a force defensively, but he doesn't necessarily dominate defensively. Like, people aren't changing their game plan because he's in there. Ben Wallace was a force defensively, but he didn't make teams change up what they want. Like, people still went in the lane. People still going to attack the basket. So defensively, it's much more difficult in the NBA than it is in the college game to dominate. Offensively, he's still a work in progress. And one thing that, being a coach, one thing is the hardest thing to teach is aggressiveness, particularly offensive aggressiveness. If you're a lead dog, you got to bring it on both ends on a nightly basis. You can't play one end and then don't play on the other end. And Davis is still a work in progress. He rarely has been a lead dog, even on his high school. Again, this is a dude that up until his junior year of high school, I've seen interviews where he said he didn't even know if he was going to go play basketball in college. So, again, this isn't the guy who's been groomed to be a franchise guy. He hasn't been groomed for that. He hasn't developed, and it's a skill. To carry a squad is a skill. That Kentucky team had more talent than most people they faced. They had the top two picks in the draft. So it wasn't like he was just carrying them by himself. And the other guy who got picked behind him was a defensive stud, too. So it wasn't like he was just out there with a bunch of scrubs. He was Bill Russell playing at University of San Francisco, blocking everything away. That's not what it was. Again, I still think he's going to be a very good NBA player. I think he's going to be a multiple All-Star. I think he'll contend for Defensive Player of the Year award. I don't think he's going to be an All-NBA first teamer. At any point in his career, though, I don't think he's going to be one of the top five guys in the league at any point in his career. He's going to be very good, but I don't think he's going to be that. That's all I'm saying. You know, we got a little sidetracked with the whole Anthony Davis conversation, but that's all I'm saying. I like what he brings to the table. I love Cat's play defense, and I like what he does. I just think people are assuming that because he's the number one pick and he led Kentucky to a national championship as a freshman and he got a gold medal, that means something when he gets to the NBA. Nobody care about that in the NBA. You know that. Nobody care about what you did in college. Ask Carmelo. You know what I mean? He won a national championship as a freshman. That has not proved that he can lead. He's a good name. So Justin, I'm not. We gonna go there, and listeners out there, we gonna get into this. We gonna get into all of this stuff on a special. Check us out. It's gonna be available on iTunes on the 25th. Check us out because we're gonna really dig into some of this stuff a little bit more deeper. This isn't necessarily format, but we went there, and we'll get back to it in a moment. So back to the dynasty question. UK, University of Kentucky. Again, I think a dynasty's coming there. Another place where I think we could see a dynasty emerge, and y'all might laugh at me on this one, but again, this is a team much like the Patriots that may not win a bunch of championships in a row, but they're striking when they have an opportunity to. They're getting in when they have an opportunity to, and that's the New York Giants. All right? The New York Giants, they've got two in the last, what, 4 or 5 years? They've got two titles. I can see them squeezing in because, again, this is a franchise that they have a formula. You know, they have a style of play. You know, they're still one of the few teams that can get pressure with just their front four. They have a great quarterback. They're still trying to figure out. I think this is a team that they can strike. As long as they got Eli, I think they got a shot. As long as they have that running game, you know, they have a shot. As long as they keep the pieces in place that allow them to be successful, any given year they can snatch one. In the same way the Patriots can, as long as they got Brady. As long as Belichick is scheming, as long as those things are constant, they have a shot. So the Giants, you know, they could take a couple years off and sneak in another one, and then they got three. So that's another team I think that we could see developing in what we would call a modern-day dynasty, because it's so hard to do it year in and year out, particularly in the NFL where injuries play such a huge role in who's available to you. And those are completely unpredictable and completely out of the team's hands. So we'll revisit that conversation talking about dynasties. You're listening to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital. Make sure you hit up the fellas at Resistance Digital to get all your electronic needs met. They're going to give you a great deal at a great price with great equipment. Quality is their game. So check out the fellas at Resistance Digital at resistancedigital.com. Now, we're going to get into our NBA top 25 players. Now, we have Justin here. So, again, this is going to be hotly contested and very contentious, to say the least. All right? So I'm going to go through my 25, my bottom five of my top 25 right now. At number 25, I have Manu Ginobili, my guy, all right? we the guys that is a bunch of times. I got Ginobili at 25. At 24, I got the truth, P-double, Paul Pierce. At 24, I'm sorry, at 23, I have Fresh Legs, Kyrie Irving. All right? At number 22, I have James Harden. At 21, I have Jay Smooth, Josh Smith. So to recap, 25, Manu Ginobili. 24, Paul Pierce. 23, Kyrie Irving. 22, James Harden. 21, Josh Smith. What? Drop the mic. I'm getting a lot of static. All right, so
can
who?
You hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay. Yeah, James Harden, after his appearance in the finals, really? That's where you're going to go with this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I got him at what? 20. I got him at 22.
That's pretty high.
He's still. Who would you have above him?
What position do you put him at, first and foremost?
He's a guard.
Is he a two guard? Is he a three? Where you put him?
That don't matter. He's a guard.
He's a guard.
He's a guard.
Is he better than D Wade?
No, but D Wade's not. He's not even in D Wade's realm.
I'm about to run off a slew of guards here for you that are better than him. Which we're not even going to talk forwards or centers, which is sheer evidence as to why he's not in the top 25.
Okay, go for it.
Did you see what he did? Who did
no, give me your list.
Miami?
Give me your list of guards better than James Harden.
I'm going to give you almost any starting guard in the NBA. Hence why he doesn't start.
Any starting guard in the NBA better than James Harden?
Bruh.
You can't even give me another two guard better than James Harden.
Kobe Bryant.
Okay, Kobe, D-Wade, they're not in my 20s
like,
at all.
Like,
neither one of those
like,
is in my 20s.
I like Manu
Ginobili.
Neither
one of those guys are in
the...
Huh?
I like Manu Ginobili better.
You could like Ginobili better. I'll take that. They're in the same range, in my opinion. You can say that. I got them, what, three spaces apart. Gino's slowing down. Gino gets hurt a lot. Gino gets hurt a lot. That's the only reason I would have Howard Harden ahead of him. But... similar game, similar style of play.
You're
going to
talk about guys' ages. However, I give guys a lot of credit based on their ages and what they've accomplished. So I'm known not to crown guys too early. Therefore, I'm taking Ray Allen over James Harden.
For
I'm
this
taking
season?
Jesus Shuttlesworth.
For this
Absolutely.
Season?
For this season?
I'll take that bet any day. Guarantee Ray Allen doesn't put up nearly the same amount of numbers that James Harden does.
Well, look at the dynamic of
and
the
team. And they both on good teams. They both
look
on
at
good
their
teams.
Exactly. Look at the dynamic of the teams.
But if Ray Allen is better, that shouldn't matter.
It should matter when you got guys like LeBron James, D. Wade, and Chris Bosh that are first, second, and third options. James Harden is a third option on his team because everybody else has Durant and Westbrook are I'm going to use a little French on it. They're comme ci, comme ça. They're just okay. You want to know what I'm telling you?
Ray Allen? Come on, man. Ray Allen has had a better career to this point than James Harden. But right now, you telling me the Boston Celtics just let James Harden, the caliber of James Harden, just walk for $6 million a year? They wouldn't sign him for $6 million a year? If they had the opportunity to sign James Harden for $6 million a year, they're going to let him go to the Heat?
You mentioned this earlier in the show. They said that they need to sign James Harden long-term ASAP. Why haven't they done it yet? It's not because they don't have a cap space. They could do it. He's not who you think he is. He's fool's gold.
They actually don't have the cap space.
Real competition.
They actually don't have the cap space because
they
paying Ibaka $12 million. They paying Kendrick Perkins $10 million. You got Durant and Westbrook both getting $14-15 million a year. They actually don't have the cap space because they're still in Oklahoma City for the moment.
Teams have a way to create cap space. Look at the Lakers and how they finagled the Dwight Howard, Steve Nash, Kobe Bryant. All of them.
Where the Lakers play at, Justin? Where the Lakers play at?
What I got to do with anything?
Where they play at? L.A.
In the Staples Center, to be exact.
Yep. Yeah. That's very different than Oklahoma City. If you ever been.
I've been to both, actually.
Very different world.
I've been to both,
very
actually,
different
but
world.
That doesn't mean you can't finagle. It's all business. It's all the NBA. It's the same system. All they have to do is go above the luxury tax, make a few deals, trade a few of their bumps. They can get James Harden paid. It's not a priority to them. You know
it's
why
a
it's not a priority?
It's not a priority.
Because he's not who you think he is.
Wait, he's not the 22nd best player in the league?
I don't think so. And to prove it, we'll have to go way out of the show's element because I know you're not ready to give your 1 through 20. I love the
you're
fact
right, that you're but I can tell you, there's other than Kobe and D-Wade, there's not another shooting guard, I think, right now in the NBA, a true shooting guard, not one of the point two scorers like a Russell Westbrook or somebody like that, who probably really is a shooting guard.
What do you consider Eric Gordon to be?
Shooting guard that I feel is better than, his head and shoulders better than James Harden. You could argue Ginobili. You could argue that. But again, I think Ginobili misses a lot of time. He's hurt a lot. At this point in his career, the last 5 or 6 years, he's had stretches where he's missed 10, 11, 12 games. I would downgrade him for durability at this point. But he's Gino's still a very efficient player. He can create. He can shoot the three. He plays good D. I don't have a problem with you could interchange. Again, this is a guy who had Ginobili as one of his top 50 players of all time. So if you want to slide Ginobili up three spots ahead of Harden, cool. That's not even an argument to me right there. So you have yet to present an argument to me why James Harden isn't the 22nd best player in the league. I'm gonna move on. Who else you got a problem with? Who else you got a problem with?
Where do you put Eric Gordon?
Eric Gordon is not healthy enough. He's not on my top 25. Not yet. After the season, he could be. He has the potential to be, but sample size is too small. You know, he's had some great moments with the Clippers. He had a great season. Last year, he played, what, like 10 games? 10, 11 games? There's just not enough there. But Eric Gordon has the talent.
One-dimensional.
One-dimensional.
I put Joe Johnson over it.
Joe Johnson.
What?
For real?
You would?
For real? I don't think the GMs in Brooklyn would. If the GM's in Brooklyn, again, look at it like that. If Oklahoma City said, we'll give you James Harden, we'll sign James Harden right now to a max deal, and we'll trade, so the money's not an issue, we'll trade you James Harden for Joe Johnson, Brooklyn would take that in a heartbeat.
Brooklyn would never take that deal. If they're paying the same money.
Now, D-Will, step in, D-Will.
You're going to take a seven-time returning All-Star over a guy who's never made the All-Star game every time. Joe Johnson has made the All-Star game the past 7 years. Don't you dare speak this blasphemy.
No, you're trading for a guy who's actually been to a conference finals, who's actually been to a Western Conference, who has actually been to a finals, for a guy who can't get his team as a lead dog out of the second round of the playoffs. That's what you're trading. You can give your stats all you want. Joe Johnson is not a winner. Joe Johnson has won nothing in his career.
You are comparing a sixth man to a bona fide all-star. This is asinine.
He put up basically the same numbers as Joe Johnson as a sixth man.
You got to
playing
be
much, playing way less minutes.
Mama, I was in Italy last week.
More efficient. James Harden is a more efficient scorer on the offensive end than Joe Johnson is. Joe Johnson is a high volume scorer.
This is blasphemous. We need to move on from this topic.
D-Wills, pull your boy off the ledge. D-Wills, if you're Billy King, and I'm saying Presti.
You've got a seven-time All-Star.
And I'm saying Presti.
Never made the All-Star game.
And I'm saying Presti. He's not, but you know what? Joe Johnson's not going to make seven more. He's not going to make seven more All-Stars. So what? He's a seven-time All-Star. He's not going to make seven more. Unless he's going to make seven more All-Stars.
Are you predicting that James Harden's going to be a 14-time All-Star now?
A 14-time All-Star? No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying right today, James Harden is better than Joe Johnson. Period.
I couldn't disagree with you more.
October 16th, 2012,
I want
James Harden is better than Joe Johnson. All right?
Yeah, Joe Johnson just got a max. He's on his third $100 million deal, and James Harden can't even get an extension. Come on,
man. That's not a credit to Joe Johnson. That's a credit to the NFL management. The Hawks are terrible at management.
He got the contract from Phoenix first.
That means they're awesome, right?
He got the contract from Phoenix first. Atlanta didn't start these $100 million deals with Joe Johnson.
Because Phoenix is a greatly run franchise.
Phoenix was smart enough to pay that man, and Atlanta was smart enough to pay that man. He got an
All-Star.
They
were smart enough to pay him, and then they let him go. Right, because they knew they shouldn't have paid him all that money.
Justin, all I can say. Justin, all I can say was when they made that deal, I said automatically made Danny Ferry the executive of the year.
Exactly. Who said that?
Now let me tell you, you can go back to our show again, not to keep quoting old shows, but I said the same thing. I said it was a bad deal for Atlanta because it capped them for the future. However, there's a reason they did it because they saw value in Joe. And them seeing value in Joe is no different than OKC not seeing value in Harden. Let me finish. I've been letting you finish.
Now, I want to get you on record with this. Are you saying OKC is not going to pay James Harden?
I think they're going to find a way to, but I think that
they're
hesitating.
Okay, then what you're saying don't matter, man. If you think they're going to pay him eventually, then you can't say they don't value him.
You cut me off twice. I can't even get a word out. They are hesitating to make him a deal because they may not trust him. They might not think he may turn into a shell of what he was in the regular season because he didn't show up in the finals. He can't go up with the big boys. Him and Ibaka were up for extensions at the same time. They chose to pay Ibaka. Ibaka's not even in your top 50 probably. Why do you think that is? He's more valuable than James Harden, who's never going to be an All-Star.
It's about timing, bro. It's about timing. You said it yourself. You're not willing to even go on record and say they won't give him the money. If you really think that's how they feel, you put it on wax You put it on wax right today. They're not giving them the money.
They're not going to give him Joe Johnson money.
Nobody's getting Joe Johnson money because you can't under the CBA.
You know what? I'm going to switch this up. Guess what? I'll take Monte Ellis over James Harden.
That's what I said.
I'll take Monte Ellis
both
over
y'all,
James
both
Harden.
Both of y'all drunk. Again,
you're the only one that's right on this
show. Take Monte Ellis over James Harden. If you gave the Milwaukee Bucks a choice, they're not taking. If you gave the Milwaukee Bucks a choice, they're going to take James Harden over Monte Ellis. If you gave any of these GMs a choice other than Kobe and D Wade, they're taking James Harden.
Because at least for Ellis, you can say there's one. What you can't say about Harden is he's in the top three or four in this. And one thing you can say about Ellis is he's probably in the top three or four in put on one end of the court. Defensively, he may not
top
have
three or four. What? What does he do? What does he do well?
He puts
what
the ball in the basket.
What's his elite skill?
He does with two guys.
He's a volume shooter.
The first
he's
a guard.
Lou Williams with more minutes.
He puts the ball in the basket.
He's exactly so does Lou Williams.
But
Lou Williams with more minutes. Lou Williams can ball. But Lou Williams only plays one end, just like your boy Ellis. He only played one end.
And James Harden is a defensive stopper.
He's not a stopper, but he's better than Monte Ellis.
You got to be kidding me, bro. He puts up more resistance
than Monte Ellis.
Joe Johnson and Monte Ellis are better than the sixth man. Mind you, both these guys have been starting their whole careers. James Harden, he's only started as a substitute. He's filled in for guys that's been hurt. Don't get it twisted here. He comes off the bench for a reason. I argue he won't even win sixth man of the year this year.
And?
How you got a guy in your top 25? He won't even win sixth man. He's coming off the bench, and he can't even be the best guy coming off the bench.
You know, in my top 25, he won't win a sixth man of the year. He's still one of the 25 best players in the league.
I think he'll
somebody's got to listen. Somebody's got to score on bad teams. Somebody's got Tyreek Evans looked like a beast a couple years ago. While he was on a bad squad. OJ Mayo, when he came into the league, averaged 18 points a game on a bad team. When the team started focusing on winning and playing games to win, their numbers drop. They still ain't figured out how to win in Sacramento. When Memphis started winning, where did OJ go? To the bench. Same thing would happen with Monte Ellis. If he were on a team that was focused on winning and not just getting numbers, he wouldn't be the same kind of guy. You wouldn't view him that way. You can't take that stuff out of context.
Monte changed the walking season last year.
Monte Ellis did? Hey, I'm up
he
here, man. He did not make me watch the Bucks game.
Because of Monte. Joe Johnson has been a top four team in the East for the past 5 years.
And they can't get no better than that. And he's going to be a top four. He's going to be on a top four team this year that ain't going nowhere.
You're right. I forgot. He plays 1-on-5. My bad. He plays 1-on-5. You're right.
He does. You know he's a ball stopper. You've been watching. You in Atlanta. You've been watching that dude.
Got season tickets. Had them for years. And I'll put my I guarantee you New Jersey wouldn't take no. Ooh, I almost cussed on the air. Man, let's move on. Please.
Let's move on. Y'all got any other problems?
We do it for the kids. Let's move on.
You know, it's a family show. Who else y'all got a problem with? In my 25 through 21 right now. Again, I got Gino at 25, Pierce at 24, Kyrie Irving at 23, James Harden at 22, Josh Smith at 21.
You know what? You guys always look at me as the contrarian. You guys always feel as if I'm causing the ruckus on the show. So I'm going to give you props for Josh Smith. Although he could be higher, I love at least the fact that you respect him enough to put him in your top 25. So I'm going to give
you credit. And you know what? He could be higher, but again, things just haven't meshed well. I still don't think we've seen his best basketball yet, and I don't think things have meshed well in Atlanta in the past. I just, you know, Horford get hurt last year. You know, just I don't know. I think this year we're going to see him really take a step. And by the end of the season, I think we're going to view him very differently than we view him right now. But yeah, I got him at 21. Dude, he plays both ends. He's multifaceted. He finally stopped touching threes. He finally realized that, you know, he finally developed some shot selection. So, yeah, appreciate the props. I'll take it. So that's my list. More to come on that. We'll get through the rest of that as we continue to go on through the list. But, okay, I'm going to take that note on James Harden, and we're going to revisit that throughout the season.
Absolutely.
All right, we're definitely going to revisit that one. When we have you back, we're going to talk to James Harden. All right, you listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio. Right now, we're going to recap week 7 of the NFL. The first question I asked D. Wills is, what do we know now? After week 7, what new information do we have?
We know that the AFC is messed up. They got two teams with winning records after last night. We know that Andy Reid don't know if he's coming or going. We've been confirmed that he is on the edge. We know that Tom Coughlin needs to get the credit he deserves after putting that beat down on San Francisco, that the Giants are stabilizing. That they are, in terms of all phases of the game, are doing it. The thing we do know, and we talked about this last week, and that's not being talked about as much nationally, that these teams who are consistent have been very effective with running football.
Yes, sir.
And playing defense. In a time when we're talking about scoring and wide-open offense, that – The teams that have been the most effective and most consistent have gotten back to the basics around defense and running the football. Yes, they can throw, but there are teams that you have to put 8 or 9 in the box.
And, again, you're getting this analysis from us. Before the national media catches on, you know, again, in a week or two, they're going to be talking about, oh, yeah, the teams with balance are all winning. Wow, how novel. I thought this was a throw it around the ballpark league, you know, and they're going to catch up. Real sports guys, we cutting edge, so we're telling you now. We told you last week. It's about balance in today's NFL, this season at least. It's showing you that. If you don't have some sort of balance between the run and the pass and you can't defend, good luck to you. Good luck to you. All right? Look at the New York Jets. Last week, this week, they ran the ball. They ran the ball. They played defense. They won a game. Now, it does help they were playing another starry team, but you still got to go out there and beat them. So, Justin, what do you know about the NFL after this week?
This is what I know. I know that the Falcons are the truth. The Atlanta Falcons, the only undefeated team in the NFL, I know they're the truth. And to attest what D. Will so eloquently put, teams that can run the football, teams that have balance. You look at Michael Turner, he's running the football well for Atlanta. You look at Matty Ice, he's throwing the football well for Atlanta. I think they got the best receiving core in the game between Roddy White and Julio Jones. You can pick your poison if you want to. I think that we know that the Atlanta Falcons are the absolute truth. Number two, I think we know that anyone can win on any given week. We see some rare upsets with Seattle this year. We've seen New England lose to some suspect squads this year. We've seen Denver get picked apart. You know, you never know any given week which is your week. And number three, no lead is safe. Philadelphia last week blowing a 10-point lead in 5 minutes. Absolutely ridiculous. Dallas blowing leads left and right. Last and foremost, number four, the Dallas Cowboys stink. Drop the mic.
What's with the Dallas Cowboys? Hey, you gotta enlighten us on that.
I feel like every year they get the hype. Oh, this is their year. Every year since Michael Irvin and them boys retired, this is the year. Mainstream media, ESPN, Dallas Cowboys are this. Dallas Cowboys are that. Tony Romo is always in the news. And I get tired of them. They haven't been in the playoffs since when? And last time they did, didn't Romo fumble a snap to win? The guy can't play a lick. Put me out there. I can do what Tony Romo does. I'm just as effective. And every year, the media hypes up the Dallas Cowboys as if this is their year. Until Jerry Jones humbles himself and gets the general manager, who's not him, so he can be fired like anybody else, they're going to continue to struggle. They get low-character guys with potential, which, if you look at the NFL, the teams that are winning are the high-character guys. New England wins high-character guys, Tom Brady. You know, Indianapolis used to win with Peyton Manning, high character. Look at Philly. They got a guy like Mike Vick that can't win nothing. You got to get high-character guys in this league who are smart enough to understand the game. And Dallas doesn't have those players. So I think they absolutely stink. They need to be on the all-hype team.
I want winners.
I'm going to tell you that. You hit it right on the head. And Dallas is like the pro version of Notre Dame, the Fighting Irish, until this year. It's like every year people were trying to hype them up. Finally, this year they're actually making it happen. But people, it's like they want Dallas to do it. And what Dallas demonstrates as much as anything is that you cannot win this league if you don't have end of the game management. That means you have to know time, score, and you got to know what. And that's all with great teams. We talk about dynasties, teams that understand how to finish. And they know what decisions to make down the stretch. And they mess up at that more than any other team and in some egregious ways. And so I'm with you on the Dallas one. I just wanted to throw that support in there.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm sure game change, you got a problem with it.
Nah, I'm not.
So we all on board
on
that one.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't like those kind of those sports institutions that we kind of are waiting on to be good. You know what I mean? I'm not about that. The Notre Dames, you know, the Dukes, where it's just like they gotta be good. If they're not good, nobody really cares. And every year, people want so bad for the Cowboys to be good, they just never cut the mustard. They just never cut the mustard.
Never.
But I'll tell you, what I know after week seven, I know that. Russell Wilson is a G. He's not the cat that you want chasing you, right? Because he'll catch you. He got Brady, and he got Aaron Rodgers. Now he got Rodgers on the technicality, but getting got is getting got. Getting got is getting got. The kid's got some chops. He's got some moxie. The kid can play. The Falcons, they're getting it done. You know. It wasn't a pretty win this week, but again, you get got. They got the win. That's all that matters. And that's even better than a 20-point victory, in my opinion, because it shows that even when you play poorly, you still can pull out the game. You still put yourself in a position to win. And that's what they played poorly for most of that game against the Raiders, but they still put themselves in a position to win the game. And that, to me, is more impressive than a 30-20-point blowout of a team. Is what do you? How do you look when you play bad? Can you still be beat when you play bad? And when you can't beat a team when they play poorly, that's a tough team. Those are teams that you need to be scared of. It's like even if they play bad, they still got a shot to win. You know, some teams, you know, like the Packers last year, they were just hot all season, and when they played poorly, they lost. They played poorly in one game, and they lost it. And then they played poorly in the playoffs, and they lost. The teams that can play poorly and they can still find a way to win, that's why the Eagles would still worry me if I were teams out there. Because regardless of all their problems, they still find a way to win games. You know, that's a team that, again, much like the Giants last year, the Giants were that way. Early in the season, couldn't get out of their own way. They still kind of kept finding ways to win, kind of finding ways to hang around until they figured it out. Until they got a rhythm. Then when they got a rhythm, it was a hard team to beat. So those are the teams that I will watch out for and continue to look out for. Now, we want to touch base on some games and reflect on some games this past week. The first game we're going to touch base on, Packers versus Texans. Now, this game was a part of my onion package last week. You know, I predicted that there would be no more undefeated teams. You know, the Falcons proved me wrong. They pulled it out. You know, Raiders had him against the ropes. They rope-a-doped him, got out of the corner, scored a knockout. Hats off to the Falcons. Keep it up. The Packers, though, versus the Texans. Now, this was a game where Aaron Rodgers looks like he came in there with a huge chip on his shoulder, looking to prove something to who, I don't know. I don't know who pissed him off, who ticked him off. I don't know who got him upset. But somebody said something to Rodgers that got him upset. I don't know if somebody, you know, they didn't want to get a discount, double check or what. But somewhere along the line, he was upset. He came out swinging it. And Houston just wasn't really ready for it. D. Wills, what were your impressions of the Packers versus Texans game?
I think one of the things that we learned about the Texans' defense is that you can beat them over the top, that they're going to play that man-to-man, they're going to press, and if you got receivers and get behind them and you're willing to go with the ball, that's something they gotta look at, and we're seeing the effect of Cushing's injury. But we also learned about Texas is that the Texans, that their ability to play from behind and, you know, and what's going on with, you know, with Andre Johnson. What I loved about Green Bay is they shored some things up on defense. They got in on that run game. And Texas have been, you know, basically just running people over. The Texans have. And they defensively, they shored some things up. And then you're right, Rodgers looked like he was upset. You know, J.J. Watt did a discount double check, and then he kind of threw the belt away early on. He got that sack, which was a good little thing he did. But from that point on, they just took the beat down. And just like you said about the Giants, Green Bay is kind of in that same situation that the Giants were in. And if they can put some things together, they're going to be a tough team going down the stretch.
Justin, what takeaways did you have from that game?
I think that – I know you asked the question, who pissed Aaron Rodgers off? I know who pissed him off. All three teams that beat him this year. He's not used to being 2-3. He's used to being the man. You 2-3, you playing with a chip on your shoulder every week you go out there. He used to losing less than three games a season. Just one season ago, he only lost two games, once in the regular season and once in the playoffs. That would piss me off if I was the man, Mr. Discount Double Check. So I learned that Aaron Rodgers, you can't count him out. He's got a moxie about himself. He plays with a chip on his shoulder, especially when their backs are against the wall. They lose that game, you're treating them like New Orleans. You think they're done. And I think it's unfair to treat a team with the stature of the Green Bay Packers like that. And I think they proved to you, you know, Houston's up and coming. We understand that. Yeah, they have some challenges with you know, their best defender, not named J.J. Watt, being injured. But is Houston really who we think they are? That's what I think we really learned. I don't think they're who we think they are. Like D. Wills put, you can go over the top on them, and they can't play from behind. They're used to grounding and pounding with Arian Foster. When a team has a lead on you, you can't run the ball. Matt Schaub was a
they
backup.
They are who we thought they were.
Matt Schaub was a backup here in Atlanta for years. I watched him every time he took the field when Mike Vick broke his leg. And, you know, he's all right, but he's not real. And that's my takeaway from that particular game. Matt Schaub's not who you think he is. They overpaid him like the Hawks and Suns may have done on Joe Johnson. However, Joe Johnson at least will get you to the Pro Bowl.
Oh, man. I'm going to keep you going, man. I'm going to keep you going. I'm going to throw you to the next one. Cowboys, Ravens. Ray Lewis might be done for the season. Is done for the season. Might be done for his career after this game. The Ravens pull it out. The Cowboys try and make a comeback. But, of course, they fall short in the end. What are your takeaways from the Cowboys-Ravens game, Justin?
Well, I already alluded to one fact. The Cowboys stink. I think all three of us agree on that. So I'm not really toting the Ravens on my high horse due to them beating the lowly Dallas Cowboys, who I expect to finish last in their division. I think it's a testament to Baltimore that despite all the injuries, Le'Darius Webb, Ray Lewis, that they're still finding a way to win football games. I put all the credit on the coaching staff and how prepared their team is. What's the saying? You know, next man stand up. And I think they're the epitome of next man stand up. And I really love what they're allowing Joe Flacco to do. That fast pace, read the defense, you call the play, you throw it down the field, use your right rights if you need a safety outlet. I really love what Baltimore is doing offensively, and we have not seen that in the past from this Baltimore team. I think we learned that Baltimore's coaching staff is smarter than the rest, and that even though they're hurt defensively, next man will stand up.
All right. D. Wills, what were your takeaways from Ravens-Cowboys?
You know, the Cowboys had a chance to win, and what killed them is game management. You know, they got one playoff with 26 seconds left, right? It needed to get into a field goal position. So, but that's time and time again. So it's like they're in the games, but at money time, either the coach it doesn't have them prepared to do the right things. I mean, how many times have we seen this? And that you have to put on the coaching staff to really make sure folks understand, you know, people who play football, you go over those situations over and over again, that you do that all throughout the week. This is nothing new, you know. And they got enough veterans on their offensive team that they should know how to make that happen. So that's inexcusable. And so, you know, what we learned is that the Cowboys are never going to realize what they can do until they understand that winning is about execution at the end of the game. That's what we understand. Now, on the other side, I agree with Justin that great teams and great coaches find a way to win no matter who shows up. Belichick's been doing this for years. Tomlin's been doing this for years. You know, Harbaugh had tried to put stuff. I mean, you watch these coaches, they just figure out how to keep making it go. They make adjustments. They figure out a goal. They don't allow – their team culture doesn't allow for that to be an excuse. And the Ravens, I think, are going to battle. They're taking a hit. It's their leader. They got to figure out where they're going to go from here. But you believe that they got the coaching staff is going to figure it out. Whereas with the Cowboys, you know, days are numbered. There's days are numbered in Dallas. And somebody's going to have to take a deep look at where they're going. I mean, there's a whole bunch of folks on the block in Dallas. The only person who can't be fired is the owner. He need to fire himself. So, you know, and you know, you can't wait for him to pass on or anything like that. He just don't know enough to get out the way. So it's a mess. Dallas is a mess. And all these people nationally trying to make up for Tony Romo. You know, at some point, you have to be the leader. I got on Vic about that earlier this year. You're at a point in your career right now where you got to be accountable for moving this ship forward. We saw that with Peyton Manning last night. Down by 24, he, along with the defense, but he made some decisions about what they're going to try and do around execution. And what did Peyton say at the end of the game? He said, yeah, it was great to get a win, but to come back, but that means that we played terrible in the first half. I mean, that is, you know, he don't let anything go. And you don't see that kind of discipline in Dallas.
Well said, well said. I'm going to stick with you, and we're going to roll into the Giants 49ers. What are your takeaways from the Giants and 49ers? We talked about this game earlier. The Giants come in, go cross country, they're on the road, and they put it on the 49ers. Blowout fashion, punched them in the mouth, left them under the Golden Gate Bridge. It was nasty.
You hear it better. See, and this is a great example of what we were talking about last week, Game Changer. You know, why people argue with us and talk about how to win games, that the Giants took the bully behind the witch. You know I love Harbaugh. You know, my brother would probably get mad because I'm talking about him. They're good friends. You know, I like Harbaugh. But they took the bully behind the woodshed. And the way they beat him was they ran the football at him as well. I mean, physically, they didn't just beat him. They beat him physically. And to beat a defense like the 49ers that way, I mean, it's demoralizing when you run the ball on people and run it in. You could even what Rodgers did to Texas, the Texans, that was demoralizing, but it wasn't like the Giants, because the Giants beat you like it was like when Buster Douglas beat Tyson. He just kept hitting him in the mouth. He didn't win on points. He hit him right in the mouth. And that's what I loved about this. The Giants are physical. They're a complete team. They ran that football the way you need to run the football. Ahmad Bradshaw was a beast, wasn't he? I mean, he was running with a sense of purpose. And he's running that one, the best defense in the league, and just running at him, running over. And so, to me, it was an incredible display. But I got a little surprise for y'all later on.
Okay. So, Justin, who was your impressive performer a week seven?
My impressive performer has to be the one, the only, Robert Griffin III.
Boy.
RG3 looked like a man amongst boys out there. RG3 impressed me so much. There was all this hype about him all week. Should he play? Shouldn't he play? The concussion, what are the after effects? This brother turned it up on them boys. He threw for 182. He ran for 130-plus. He ran the game-winning touchdown in the fourth quarter. Not to mention he led me to a fantasy victory, scoring 34 fantasy points. Let me tell you, RG3 impressed me so much that I doubt I'll ever sit him on the bench ever again in my fantasy league. He's that good.
Now, here's a question I want to throw out to both of you. Justin, you can go at it first, and then D-Wills, I want you to give me an answer. At this point in time, now, at the beginning of the season, I would say this was, without a question, a no-brainer. But I think now there's a little bit more doubt. Who are you taking, RG3, Cam Newton, right today?
Well, to me, it was never a question. I'll take RG3, and I'm going to tell you why. I think that Cam Newton reminds me a lot of Mike Vick. He's a physical specimen. He's big, he's fast, and he give you a play to make you go, ooh-ah. You know, I hate to make this comparison. It's kind of like Allen Iverson in basketball. But what's he going to win? You know? RG3, he's intellectual. You know, he went to a school. He went to Baylor to get an education just like he went there to play football. Cam cheated his way into school just to play football. You know, RG3 is an intellectual guy who was a biology major or some crazy stuff like that. The guy can read a defense just like Andrew Luck or Peyton Manning can before he gets to the line of scrimmage. Cam runs because it's designed for him, and that's his strength. RG3 runs because he has to. He doesn't want to. He wants to lace that ball into you at the, you know, the opportune time for the receiver to make the best play for the team. He's an all-around team guy, and I always take, again, I talked about high-character guys before. He's a high-character guy with a high IQ in real life and a high football IQ. I take RG3.
All right, D. Wills, who you taking?
I don't have facts to back this up.
But what I will say is, Justin's on fire tonight, and I can't even say it better than he said it, but I would take RG3 because all the reasons Justin said, that he runs because he wants to, not because he has to, and he clearly thinks the game. So he runs after he's done his correct read progressions. So he runs a lot like Steve Young used to run, but he just runs it with a 4-1. You know, Steve Young was a great athlete. People don't brand him as that. Steve Young was Michael Vick-like. Steve Young was a great
athlete. Steve Young's not black.
That's right. So I kind of put that out there like that. You just how we do it on a – we unpack that stuff. That's why I use Steve
right.
Young as an example. Some of those folks are like, Steve Young? Yeah, Steve Young, y'all. Look at the Tampa Bay film. So – But I think Justin hit it that this is a guy who studies the game. You know, he wanted to go to law school, I think. I mean, he you know, and where I always got mad is that they used to describe Luck in the way that they also should have described RG3. But what I've loved is that there have been some experts who have really kind of connected on this thing, and that if his legs ever went, he still is going to be good. Whereas Cam, I'm not sure if his legs ever go, he still can be good. Whereas I know if RG's legs ever go, he still got all the tools to still be great. And so I take RG, and I love Cam, and I think Cam, what makes Cam different than Vic is that earlier on, he's trying to correct those things that he needs to correct around studying. He got a little bit of ways to grow on that, and you're not going to see the you'll see more benefit from that effort next year and the year after than you see now.
So has RG3 played above your expectations, or has Cam regressed?
I would say that I expected RG3 to play well, not this good, because I felt like Washington had the championship-style defense and a running game that would allow for him to have the kind of play action. So I felt like he would play well, but I didn't think he's going to play as well. But I would say that Cam has regressed in a way that I knew he was going to have a little tougher year, but not this tough.
Yeah. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Who's your impressive performer? You know, with Cam, before we get there, with Cam, the thing that I'd be a little wary about is we talked about this last week with Sanchez, and I used the example of staying ahead of your scouting report.
That's right.
Where I would get worried with Cam. He's got to stay ahead of his scouting report, because if he gets behind the scouting report, it's going to be a problem. You know, if defenses get to jump on him and he doesn't continue to evolve, then that's going to be an issue. So that's my piece on Cam. Who's your impressive performers, D. Wills?
Well, I was picking a team, and I just talked about them, was the Giants. Because before, and I'm not just going to put it, but in that I would say Eli, in a sense that he is leading that team. That for them to travel across the country, and, you know, if they had just pulled it out, I expected they could play well enough to win, but not dominate. And for them to dominate San Francisco at home, you know, Harbaugh usually has a well-prepared team, especially at home. And for them to do that, the Giants, but I would say RG3 for me was a very close second.
Okay. My impressive performer was Russell Wilson. You know, I talked about it a little bit earlier. The kid is playing well beyond where he was drafted. He solidified a position that has been up in the air for the last couple of years for a franchise. And, you know, he's got them in prime position to compete this year, and he continues to put them in position to compete. He's taking his lumps, but he's figuring out how to be an NFL quarterback. He was going against one of the best, stood toe-to-toe with him, and pulled his team, pulled it out for his team. So hats off to him.
Have y'all seen – anybody seen Matt Flynn?
Nah, man.
Anybody seen him? Is he at the coffee shop in Seattle?
Matt Flynn still watching that highlight tape from that game where he took his touchdown last year.
You didn't really see him before that either. He played one game last year.
I know, and they went to anoint him, man. We argued about this thing big time. I was like, man, that's a mistake. That felt like a Kevin Cobb kind of thing. But, yeah, that felt like a Matt Schaub.
Hey, God, Mr.
Kevin Cobb, man. It's out there.
Kevin
Matt
Cobb
Castle?
Is the new Matt Schaub.
Right. It's out there, man. That's how they get down, man. That's how they get down. They throw money at them.
All started with Mitchell way back in the day when Detroit took him. You know, way back in the day. That was where the biggest ripple came out of that, you know. But yeah, he's nowhere to be seen. He's in the witness protection program. We got to get a person
Scott
of interest.
Mitchell, Scott Mitchell
him.
In my head, Scott Mitchell in my head is always linked with John Conkett. Hey, I can't think of one without thinking of the other, man. Dude just stole money.
Dude just stole money. We should do an all thieves team. We should call them all dead presidents. The all dead presidents team. And we should just put together folks who we know stole money.
Yeah, man, we're going to do
number
that.
Number one
actually,
on that list would be Jamarcus
that.
Russell. Number one on that list would be Jamarcus Russell.
Jamarcus Russell. Hey, I thought
he
Rashawn Lewis was out there.
When they drafted him number one, I started to call 911.
Yeah, buddy. We're
going to call him the three strikes.
Albert Haynesworth. I think at this point
hey,
in career,
on the low, he's one of my favorite players. I'm about to call it on Vic. One of my favorite players out there, but this year I'm about to call 911. The brother got $100 million, and he's thrown 30 picks in 30 games.
Yeah,
that's unacceptable.
See, he got one more crime. He got to atone for it.
Absolutely. I'm gonna call his probation officer.
Oh man. So we're gonna keep it moving. You listen to the Real Sports Guys, RealSportsGuys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio. We're about to hit you with the five on the black hand side. Ready, set, go.
Five on the black hand side.
So five on the black hand side, we're gonna make some early NBA award predictions. All right. So first in our NBA award, because we got Justin Page in the house, people. Again, you listen to the Real Sports Guys, RealSportsGuys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio. Now, Justin, was that your first time hearing our new intro?
First time. Much respect.
Hey, you in there? We got you in there, man.
Why you think I loved it?
This wasn't check, man, because, you know, we're trying to make sure that everybody knows what the brand is and what the brand is about and keeping it real tight. So, you know, we got you in there because you're a staple on the show. You know, you're our answer to Skip Bayless. All right? Skip Bayless ain't got nothing on the Justin Page. Right?
Let's get Skip Bayless on the show. I want to debate.
If we ever
Skip
get Skip Bayless on the show, it's going to be Skip and Justin. I'm not even going to say nothing.
Skip thinks Stephen A. Smith give him a hard time. I can't wait to talk to Skip Bayless one-on-one. Give me an hour straight. I will have that man crying to his mother.
RSG, baby. So we got Justin in the house, our resident NBA expert. We had to talk some NBA. So we're going to use the five on the black hand side to do so. First up, we're going to talk Coach of the Year candidates. Justin, who do you have? Again, these are early. The sun ain't came up yet. You still got the little crust in your eye. You yawning. Your voice is still real raspy and heavy. That kind of early predictions. All right. So, who you got coming in number one with Coach of the Year?
I'm gonna tell you now. You're not gonna like this. I'm gonna get that out the way first. I'm going to go with a franchise who we've much discussed throughout my tenure on the show. You guys typically think I over embellish for this organization, but I am going to say a guy who I've never had any faith in throughout his entire career, and I'm going to step out on the limb and say Mike Brown, the Los Angeles Lakers.
Oh.
And let me tell you why. Mm. You probably think, how hard is it to coach Dwight Howard, Steve Nash, Kobe Bryant? And I will tell you that he's going to have the most daunting of tasks, getting Kobe to take less shots, getting Kobe to play without the ball, getting the whole team's buy-in in Eddie Jordan's Princeton offense, incorporating Dwight Howard as the next coming of the Los Angeles Lakers big men. I think that to make all of those things work, he'll have to be something short of genius. And I think he's going to do it. I think he may as well employ Kobe as a player slash coach, because I think Kobe's going to, you know, play a extraordinary role in the maturation of that team and how they gel together. And I think Mike Brown is going to get it done, win Kobe his sixth championship, and then go ahead and let Kobe retire and let Miami run away with it for the next decade. Mike Brown is my coach of the year. Thoughts, comments, concerns?
Well, I'm going to say this. If Mike Brown can get Kobe to take less shots, that's quite a feat, and he deserves coach of the year, because that's like getting Kim Kardashian to stop messing with brothers. I think the Lakers are going to have an amazing regular season. I don't think that's a far-fetched idea. I think they're gonna clean up regular season. The playoffs, they're going to have some challenges, just figuring out kind of how to get it done against elite teams night in, night out. But I think they're going to have a great regular season. I think they could possibly post the best record in the NBA during the regular season. So I think Mike Brown will probably be in the running for that award. So I actually don't think that's very far-fetched.
Yeah, I think that could be. And I think a lot of way he'll work that is through Steve Nash. You know, Steve Nash has been around long enough. It's not going to shake him. He's going to have ball in his hands, and he can control that shot. Without a guy like Steve Nash, that would be a much more difficult kind of thing. But I think Steve can help control where the distribution of shots happen. At the same time, make sure Kobe gets the shots at the key point in time to make that big shot when needed. So I think the way in which he works through Nash will be a key role with that.
Yeah, yeah. So who you got, D. Will?
Me?
Who you got? Yeah, coach of the year.
I've been waiting to say this for a long time because I like this guy, and I think this team in the West can make a run, is Mark Jackson. I think he's got a mix of good young pieces. He's got some veterans. I think they can run. I make a run at the playoffs. They'll make a major turnaround. If they can keep Bogut a little bit more healthier, that'll be good to have that presence in the middle. But they got some size. They got some youth. They got a Jarrett Jack who's tough, who can fill in there. They got Kyle Landry, who I love, who can make some things happen. David Lee is the kind of guy that can do it. So they got depth, they got a lot of stuff, but he has the ability to motivate these guys, and they play hard for him. And so I think Mark Jackson is the dark horse for coach of the year. And I think he's a likable guy. I think part of getting coach of the year is also being someone who people respect and like.
Okay.
Can I comment on that real quick?
Yeah.
I love the pick, love Mark Jackson. He was respectable until his scandal last season, but I'm not going to go into that because I don't want to bash anybody personally. I think we all know about the scandal, so I think you can throw the respect out the window from a certain demographic.
I can say respect in terms of how he coaches everything else. We know Doug Collins has some stuff out there. There's a whole bunch of coaches who had their skeletons out there, so we understand that. But from respect from people in the game, and that matters around coach of the year. I agree with you. That was a fortunate thing that he had going on. But folks in the game love him. Plus, his team showed up last year, played hard. He established it in that home court. I think they're going to grow to that next level.
I completely agree,
right,
and have something to say about that later. Actually, so nice work.
Yeah.
A hat I want to throw out there. This is a name that I don't think will win it, but I think he's going to do a great coaching job this year.
Hold up. You got to sell it, man. You can't come here like you don't believe in it. I've never known you come to a kid and say, I don't think he's going to win it. You know we're going to bring out
I don't think he's going to win it because I don't think his team is going to have a good enough record. But his team is going to make a ton of progress, and I think he should be a candidate. All right, I think he should be up for the award, but we all know he usually goes to the team with the best record in the league, and I don't think this team is going to have that. But this team is going to make a ton of progress this year, and it's going to put itself kind of on the map. so to speak. And that's Rick Adelman in Minnesota.
With
the Timberwolves. I think that's a team out west, like the Warriors, that's primed to kind of move into one of those bottom couple of slots as you start to see some teams that have kind of been in that area for quite some time kind of move out. When you talk about, this could be a year where Dallas struggles a little bit. This could be, Phoenix historically has been a perennial playoff team. They're going to be out of there. So as you start to see some of those teams that have made the playoffs at the back end of the Western Conference start to back out because of age and the transition that comes with rebuilding, the Warriors and teams like Minnesota are going to have an opportunity. I think this team is going to – Minnesota in particular is going to make a lot of progress. Kevin Love is going to continue to establish himself as one of the premier names in the game. They have some good pieces around them. I just think this team is gonna make some noise. They probably won't be a top five team out west, but I think when you think about where they have been before Adelman got there, and then the progress they made last year and the progress they're gonna make this year, I think Adelman will deserve some consideration for Coach of the Year. Moving on to number two. Number two, Sixth Man of the Year.
Oh my goodness.
I got a feeling this is
gonna
be a
dude. I'm just gonna go ahead and say it. James Hart.
How did I know that?
That's my pick. Who your pick?
My pick is that James Harden won't be in the top three this year. Because he's going to have residual effects of what happened to him during the playoffs this past season. I got a cat that's probably not even on you guys' radars, okay? I'm going with
everybody's
Andre
on my radar,
Black.
Dog.
I'm going
with
Andre Black of the New Jersey, of the Brooklyn Nets. I'm going Andre Blatch.
Okay. He definitely going to be coming off the bench.
Behind Chris Humphries, and I think he's going to provide energy and the spark that they need. He's had a great run in Washington with some personal issues. I think he's going to wipe those aside with the leadership of Avery Johnson and Darren Williams. And I think he's going to show you what he's really all about. He always had the talent. He just didn't have the professional fortitude to
right.
Become the professional he's supposed to be.
Right.
And I think that he's going to do that this year, and I think he's going to get Sixth Man of the Year. With Antoine Jameson of the Lakers running up.
Ooh. Oh, Twine. He threw an Antoine reference out there. That Agent Twine in the house.
Absolutely.
You know, the Blast pick is interesting. That's it. That is off my board. And not necessarily because I don't think Blatch can ball. I think he can ball, and I think eventually he's going to take Humphrey's starting spot. If all the things you think are going to happen, where he kind of gets it together, he figures out how to be a professional, because he's more talented than Humphrey's, by far, in my opinion. I think he can rebound just as well. He definitely gives you more offensively. He's a better athlete. I see him taking that spot if he puts it together. That's a kid with a ton of talent. Who, if he puts it together, he should be starting in the league. But maybe he puts it together in that role as a bench player. I can see that happening.
Not to cut you off, Hump averaged a double-double last year.
Oh, yeah, Hump did. But
Hump was at 18-12 last year, which was solid.
You're absolutely right. But Black has more talent than Hump.
Earn him a bigger check than James Harden. By the way.
He got to split that with Kim is all. He got to split that with Kim, though. You got to split that. So he they're just trying to help him out, man. They're just trying to help him out. D-Wheels, who's your Sixth Man of the Year candidate?
I'm going a blast from the past, but yet recent. Just because it's going to be a fresh start for him. And, he does his thing. Jason Terry. Oh. And I think in Celtic land, he's gonna come off in that reserve role. I think he's gonna feed. He made a push a little bit last year, but I think he's gonna be rejuvenated coming up in playing with Doc Rivers. I think he's a dark – he's someone that – you know, I think Harden is always because he's been brand – Harden been – like Bobby Jones used to be that six-man guy back in the day. Harden kind of branded as this six-man guy that always puts him in the conversation. But I think Jason Terry was that guy before. And I think he's going to do his thing coming out of Celtics land.
Okay. All right. You're going Harden, Black, and Jason Terry on the six-man award. Moving on to number three, Rookie of the Year. Rookie of the Year. I'll let D-Wills kick this one off. D-Wills.
Man,
I
was going through a couple things. You know, there's a couple guys who had great summer leagues and things like that, and I kind of go back. I'm going to go back to a guy I said would make an impact in NCAA tournament last year. We talked about Kentucky, but I think he's in the right situation. It's Gilchrist, Kid Gilchrist. I think because of where he is and the way in which he's going to have to contribute with the team, and he does some things on multiple spaces, and he's a winner. I think he's the kind of guy. There's a lot of good candidates out there, but I looked at Crowder. I thought would be a nice kind of dog horse. You know, he's a second round pick who I think could make some noise. Was it Lillard who had a great summer league? It could be making some noise and scoring, but you know, when you make noise in the summer league, that means cats look for you when it's time to start the real season. They're gonna try to set you down early. But I think Gilchrist has that. He has that big man's game in terms of his heart, in the way he comes at it every night. I like him.
And see, I worry about Gilchrist because he's in Charlotte, and. To me, that's just a rudderless environment, man. It's the same way with Black when he was in Washington with the Wizards, man. Kid with a lot of talent, but there's no guidance, there's no veterans, there's nobody to help him shape that. Now, I don't think that's necessarily a problem for Kid Gilchrist. Again, what my concern with him is expectations. People are expecting a 19-year-old kid to come in and change the culture of an entire organization. I don't think that's fair. All right, I don't think that's fair, and I don't think he's going to be able to do that right away. And so I think he eventually, over time, he's going to get that. That's all. I just think that's a mess. And to expect a 19-year-old to come in and try and clean up that mess is unfair. Because there's so much more wrong with that franchise that he has nothing to do with. It's a daunting task for him to be expected to come in there and have this tremendous impact. But I love that kid's game. So I'm with you on that.
I was going to say, I may be wrong, and y'all both might be on this a little bit more than me, but I thought down the stretch Charlotte played pretty decent down the stretch and came together as a team a little bit down the stretch as a team. And when you
let me stop you right there. Charlotte was a mess. They're going to be a mess, and they never look good at any point in the season. Charlotte is the worst franchise in sports, and Michael Jordan needs to sell fast. Okay,
I know Mike needs to sell fast. I know Mike needs to sell fast, but down the stretch, one of the things about being a Rookie of the Year is you got to be in a position where you have to make some things happen. You got to be able to score. You got to be able to do that, and he's playing a small forward position. He's going to be in a position to shine. So that's my whole thing about him. Even though they put that expectation on him, I think he's the kind of cat who steps up.
He's playing small forward for a team that's two starting guards are Kemba Walker and Ben Gordon, who are 6'2 at best. Those
Ain't
guys,
gone.
they got the smallest backcourt in the history of sports.
My first evaluation for rookies is that he got to have an opportunity. There's nobody else going to be put in front of him. He's going to have nothing but opportunity.
You're right. There's nobody else going to be put in front of him, but he's playing with two Reagan-era grade A contra guns. This dude is Ben Gordon, Kemba Walker, man. Them dudes is going to be shooting. It's like Yosemite Sam and Elmer Floyd are going to be in the backcourt.
Look, guns is illegal in D.C., and they be shooting more than anybody.
Shooting everything. Who you got for rookie of the year?
You know me, fellas. You asked me coach of the year, I went Lakers. Rookie of the year, sixth man of the year, I stepped outside the box. I'm going to go with traditional here with the rookie of the year. I've been high on this kid since our pre-draft show last summer. I got to go Anthony Davis. I think he's an impact player. I think he's the next Tim Duncan. I think he's a class act. I think that his ball handling, passing, and shooting ability, given that he was a guard just two summers ago, and now he's playing power forward / center, I think he's given the opportunity in New Orleans to really evolve as that franchise player, the face of the franchise. My money is on Anthony Davis getting the rookie of the year, with the runner-up being the 21st draft pick, Jared Sullinger at Boston Celtics.
Okay. All right. Davis is the front runner for the award. He's in the, you know, you talk about situation, D-Will, he's in the perfect situation. He's going to be allowed to do what he does best. He's going to be allowed to play defense. He's going to get you 12, 15 points a game, I think, his first year or so. These first couple of years, he's going to be able to do that, give you 10 boards, block some shots, get some steals, get you a couple of assists here or there. He's going to be playing with Eric Gordon, who I think is a really good player. You know, Austin Rivers is going to be there. They got Ryan Anderson also to help. I think they have some good pieces around him. I think he's going to be in a position where he can do what he does. He's got another guy on offense to handle the scoring. He's got two guys on offense who can handle the scoring in Gordon and Ryan Anderson. Plus, you got a guy coming off the bench who can also score. He can focus on being him and letting his offensive game develop, taking shots when he needs to take shots, and not feeling the pressure of having to carry an entire squad on his back. I would say he's a front runner. I'm going to give you a dark horse because I agree with Justin that Anthony Davis is a front runner. A dark horse for me is Damian Lillard, and you brought him up, D. Wills. And the reason I say so is because of opportunity. This is a kid who excels in the pick and roll, in the pick and roll game. And guess what? He's about to be playing one of the best pick and roll power forwards in the friggin' league. So he's going to have a ton of opportunities to succeed. He's going to have the minutes. He's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. And he's playing with a player who's going to take some pressure off of him and allow him to excel. And hopefully by midseason, you're going to see they're going to start to complement each other as they get to know each other better on the court and develop better chemistry. So Damian Lillard is my sleeper. Is the guy I would have as my runner-up behind the unibrow.
And I was saying, I was assuming that Davis was one that I thought we would go because we all could have said Davis. So I stayed away from Davis on purpose to make it an interesting exercise.
I'm shocked that D. Wills gave him some credit the way he disrespects the man every time we talk.
Who, Davis? I never did disrespect Davis.
I'm sorry, James.
You mean me.
I'm sorry. I meant James.
I don't disrespect him.
You disrespected him earlier in the show.
I just said I don't think he's a franchise player. I said this dude's going to be a multiple all-star. He's going to be in the running for several defensive players of the year. How are they disrespecting the dude? I just don't think he's ever going to be a top-five player in the league.
I think he's going to be a 1A.
I just said everything I said earlier. I think he's going to be a 1A. I don't think he has the lead dog mentality. That's not to say he's not going to be a good player. Pau Gasol don't have a lead dog mentality. He still can ball. I don't even think Blake Griffin has a lead dog mentality. He still can ball. He's still a very good player. James Harden don't have a lead dog mentality. I still like him. I don't think he is the franchise changer that everybody thinks he's going to be. I think he's going to be a very good player. He's going to be a multiple all-star. I don't think he's ever going to be all-NBA first team.
You don't think he's ever going to be that?
No, I don't think he's ever going to be all-NBA first team.
All right.
That don't mean he's not going to be good.
That's a bold prediction right there. You should have saved that for onions.
But see, to me, that's not that bold.
I think he's for sure going to be a multiple first time.
Like, we're going to have to go to Defensive Player of the Year because y'all, we getting ready for this NBA. Y'all going to have to
We giving him too much. We giving him too much.
Next week
is going to be off the hook. So make sure you check us out. Again, that's going to be up on the 25th. We going live on Wednesday night. We're going to get it recorded. We're going to get it out there. Make sure you check it out. Defensive Player of the Year. Justin, who you got?
Defensive Player of the Year was tough for me. And I feel horrible telling you guys what I'm about to tell you guys. But I have a feeling that history repeats itself. You asked me Coach of the Year, I said Mike Brown. You asked me Sixth Man of the Year, my second runner-up was Antoine Jameson. However, Defensive Player of the Year, I have to go with the newly renamed Iron Man. No more Superman. I'm going Iron Man, Dwight Howard. I think Dwight is going to have the ability to play a defensive role where he's more of a helper as opposed to a one-on-one defender. I think that similar to Tyson Chandler last year who won the award, his guards aren't as agile, aren't as nimble, and will allow younger offensive guards to get by them and drive to the paint. And I think that's going to allow Dwight the ability to help off and block a lot of shots, get a lot of rebounds, and help start the fast break. Therefore, I am going with Dwight Howard, the newly renamed Iron Man, for Defensive Player of the Year.
All right, D. Will, you got any critique to that pick?
No, because that's my Defensive Player of the Year. So I guess we're going to bundle it together is that I think – he's playing for one strength of Mike Brown is that he's a great defensive coach. For them to be successful in the way that Justin is talking about, he's going to have to be effective defensively. I think he's motivated. I think all the other stuff is behind him. And he's also playing with Kobe. You know, Kobe's long in age. Kobe is big in intensity. I think that'll be good for him. And he's also around stabilizing force like Nash. I think he'll have – probably one of his best seasons since he's been in the pros.
All right. I'm going not really off the board, but just in a different direction. I think this is the year that LeBron James wins the Defensive Player of the Year.
You got to be kidding.
I think allowing him to play the four more is going to allow him to really show his versatility in a way that highlighted even more. Highlighted in a way that it hasn't been highlighted before. I think this is going to be that year where that's another piece that he has to put together in his puzzle is to have that year where he really shows the league and he really goes out to prove that he is a lockdown defender. He's going to have that opportunity this year because he's going to be really playing a lot of – I think he's going to be playing a lot of four this year as they go with a smaller lineup. And because of that, you're really going to see him playing four different positions throughout the game defensively. And he's going to play them effectively. And there aren't a lot of guys who can do that. And I think he's going to get a lot of props and a lot of respect for it. So that's the way I see it playing out.
I actually had him. I was strongly considering him. I give you a hard time with the dog. But he was my second to D12. That I thought LeBron is going to come back and even have a better year. And I thought that he would go try to make a challenge to go for Defensive Player of the Year. But I see Justin probably has an issue with it.
I certainly have an issue with it. I know we don't have time to get into it.
Yeah.
Maybe just give
a little bit of a snippet so people can understand where we might go with this conversation for the NBA show. Just give them a teaser of why you have an issue with it.
I think that we're far too eager to anoint LeBron as everything that basketball has to offer. Yes, he's a great physical specimen. Yes, he scores the ball extremely efficiently. Yes, he passes the ball better than anybody since Magic Johnson. Yes, he's a great player. I get everybody that. But let's really look at who he locks up. He locks up Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose, 6'6", 200 pounds soaking wet. LeBron 6'8", 260. LeBron always takes the littler guy. When he steps up in the playoffs and guards bigger guys,
against Indiana Pacers. The game, the series went six games, and it should have been a sweep because he was trying to play out of his position and guard the four when Chris Bosh was injured. He's not who you think he is defensively when he has to guard somebody of similar size. Any four or five in the league will give LeBron work. You understand what I'm telling you? Like, LeBron is a physical specimen, and he's phenomenal at offense, at defense, and everything around. However, I don't think that he should be considered for an... You know what? I was about to go out on a limb. Let me stop.
Well, he gave a season.
He should make the all-defensive team because I don't think there's a better defensive small forward out there, which is his natural position. But if you look at, you know, some of the defenders that are out there from a four and a five, I think there are better guys out there. And people give him credit saying, oh, he can guard multiple positions. Yeah, three and down. Four and up, he's got trouble. He even complained about it during the off season, saying, yeah, guarding those fours down there really takes a toll on me, and I can't be who I want to be given that it's too much bumping and grinding, for lack of a better term. That's what he said. And I just can't respect a guy defensively who doesn't want to guard anybody bigger than him. So I don't feel like he should be in the conversation for Defensive Player of the Year. I think we need to look at guys like Rondo, who lead the league in steals, or Dwight, who leads the league in rebounds and block shots, or Ron Artest, who, if you look at the numbers based on the players that he checks, you know, Ron may not score a lot of points, but the guys that he defends, they don't score much. He locks guys up. So I think we need to look at that as opposed to just LeBron's overall, you know, physicality and being bigger and stronger and faster than everybody and saying, oh, he's a great defender.
Well, we're going to have to get to this because I know we're
going to
get to
this.
We're going to get this one. We'll get this one.
Yeah.
Go ahead, game changer.
Well, we're gonna go into the onions. I'm gonna save it. You know, I hear what he's saying, and I think he was almost kind of alluding to what I was talking about. I think, you know, just like last off season, LeBron went in. He heard the critiques about no post game. He went out and worked on his post game. I think his focus this summer, after having that experience of getting beat up on the block, maybe I need to figure out if I'm gonna be playing more four. I need to figure out this whole post defense thing.
He better
figure out how to guard guys down here. So,
he
and I think he's going to show
us.
I think he's going to have an opportunity to show us that, and I think he's going to be successful at it. That's all I'm saying. You're right. He got beat up, but he's going to be playing more four this year. And if he can show that he's capable of guarding fours, the war is his.
We'll cover that next week.
Yeah, we'll cover that. We'll get into that some more. Here we go. Onions.
How to plant onions.
Say, onion. All right. This is where we make two bold predictions for the next coming week in sports. We can go across the board. Any sport doesn't just have to be NBA, MLB, NFL. We can go anywhere with our onions. So, D. Wills, kick us off for this week. What do you got?
You know, I was trying to stretch, and I almost was right with that Stanford pick last week. We were a yard away. But this week my onions are, and I told you I had a secret, is the Skins over the Giants is one. They're going to go in there and take care of business there as part of my onions. And then Northwestern over Nebraska. They make their run for the Big Ten.
I like that. Those are some major onions right there. Justin, onions for this week.
See, I apologize to the Real Sports Guys crew because I looked at onions as bold predictions. I didn't realize it was only for this week. However,
well, just throw them out there.
I'm going to throw them out there, but they're not for this week.
That's all right.
But they're pretty bold, so they're big onions, if you understand where I'm going with this. The first
do
one
what you do.
The first one is the University of Southern California Trojans will win the NCAA football championship this year.
That is bold.
Despite their number 10 ranking and their recent loss to Stanford 2 weeks ago, I think they will surpass either Alabama, LSU, Florida, one of those SEC teams that's bound to lose in the coming weeks. I think they'll beat Oregon. I think they'll beat Notre Dame, and they'll be right up there in the thick of things once all the dust settles. Number one. All
right.
And number two, we alluded to this earlier, and it's shocking to me that this is on other people's radar as well. I've got Golden State Warriors to make the 8th seed in the playoff this year.
Excellent.
I apologize that I don't have anything that we could you know, dissect by next week because we just don't know. But I really think I believe in Golden State. I believe in Mark Jackson, their draft picks, their depth in the front line with Bogut if he stays healthy and David Lee. I think Golden State has the ability to make the 8th seed in the West. That's my second.
All right.
Onion.
Okay. Cool. Now I'm gonna go way off the board. I'm gonna go Super Bowl. This is gonna be a big old red onion right here. And I have to throw this disclaimer out before I give this onion.
I don't have facts to back this up.
Tennessee beats number one Alabama at home. They're gonna be singing Rocky Top down in Knoxville. That's what's gonna happen.
I will bet you your next week's salary on that.
I am not doing that. Oh, man, I just want to throw out there, if it happens, I look like a genius. If it doesn't happen, nobody cares.
That's right.
Well, let me say this. Just to wrap up the onion segment, let me say that I've got a feeling that Utah is going to give Oregon State problems. I don't know if they're going to win, but I think they're going to give them problems. So that's something we
I think Oregon State's a bit overrated, in my opinion. I think Oregon State's a tad bit overrated. You know, that could be just me. I don't claim to be a college football expert. I know the game, but I ain't no expert. My next onion, the New York Jets will go into Foxborough and upset Tom Brady and New England Patriots. And this isn't just an onion, but this isn't just predicting a win, but I'm predicting that Tebow will play a hand in this win. I'm not saying that he's going to replace Sanchez, but Tebow is going to probably have his most productive game next week. He's going to have his biggest offensive output this coming week. It's not going to lead to him being a starter, but I think they're going to use him more in this game, and he's going to contribute. He's actually going to contribute to a win for the Jets. All right?
Did you just say the New York Jets are your team?
No. What do you mean? You're picking the Jets?
Like you're a fan of the Jets.
Nah, I'm not a fan of the Jets.
Okay, it seems like you're a fan of the Jets. I was going to say it seems that way. But, you know, you're entitled to your opinion. You're the star of this show, so pardon me.
Not a fan of the Jets at all. Now we're going to get into Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Now we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today. All right, fellas, we got to speed through this. We got about 90 seconds. Let's roll with it. D-Wills, your dog of the week.
RJ, 3.
All right. Justin Page, your dog of the week.
Aaron Rodgers. 6 touchdowns, 338 passing yards. Need I say more?
My dog of the week, Peyton Manning, bringing his team back from down 24 at the half to winning by 11. Ridiculous. ridiculous. The man was on, questions about his arm being a noodle, all gone. All gone. Peyton said, watch me. He said, watch me.
It's all good, baby, baby.
If you ask me, his defense brought him back, but, you know.
The defense played very well. It's a team effort. Football is the ultimate team sport. Football is the ultimate team sport. One player cannot do it all alone, but Peyton played extremely well down the stretch, and he moved that ball. He moved that ball, helped the defense put that additional pressure on Rivers and them. That's all we have for this week. Thank you again for listening to another edition of the Real Sports Guys. RealSportsGuys.com, RSG Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital. Check us out same time next week, 8:30, 10:30, Blog Talk Radio. Peace.